The Dharma, incomparably profound and exquisite, is rarely met with even in hundreds of thousands of millions of kalpas. We now can see it, hear it, accept it, and hold it. May we realize the true mind of the Tathagata. Today is day 3 of this 7-day session here at Turtle Back Zendo in Lawrenceville, New Jersey in 2019, in March. Yesterday I shared with you some startling news, at least for some people. Has to come from the field of quantum physics. And curiously enough, or perhaps appropriately enough, it echoes what the Buddha taught more than 2 millennia ago. It's an interesting phenomenon because apparently it has flummoxed a number of physicists. Others of them have been inspired by it to enter the spiritual realm, really. And I know a number of people who had studied physics and had come to Zen as a result of that. I'll share now something from a book called The Quantum Revelation, which is about what physics, quantum physics, has discovered as a result of what's called the double split experiment, or the two split experiment, in which it was discovered, and this was replicated any number of times, that a single photon, technically the smallest item in the universe, seemed to be able to be in two places at once at times, and at other times to be influenced, all the time influenced, by the observer of the experiment. And again, this has been replicated countless times. Going way, way back in Buddhist history, the 6th patriarch of Zen, Wei Nang, was not quite an orphan, but he had lost his father when he was 3 years old, I believe it was. His father had been banned from government service, so he must have been fairly high up to be that controversial, and sent to live on the borders with the so-called barbarians. And apparently he had married a local woman who was unable to read or write. He, having been in the government service, was highly gifted in reading and writing, because you don't end up in government service in China in those days without having to pass some pretty significant examinations, written examinations. And in those days as well, children started learning to read when they were about 4 years old. But he died before he could teach his young son how to read, and so Wei Nang was illiterate. And he helped his mother, probably from that age on, gathering twigs and branches in the forest to be sold as firewood. And that's how they survived. At one point in time, when he was about 19 years old, it is said, he was delivering a load of firewood to a customer, and he heard an itinerant pilgrim chanting some words, and something clicked in his mind. The words were, "Arouse the mind that abides nowhere. Arouse the mind that abides nowhere." It's a direct quote from the Diamond Sutra, and I would strongly advise all of you to read the Diamond Sutra over and over and over again, and to puzzle over it, because it has the same profound truths as are revealed in quantum physics and quantum mechanics. Now, I'll share now a little bit from a book called The Quantum Revelation by Paul Levy. It has a subtitle, A Radical Synthesis of Science and Spirituality. Confronted with empirical evidence that there is no objective universe existing separate from the act of observation, created a previously unimaginable reality crisis in the minds of the most brilliant physicists. It made Einstein seriously ponder deep philosophical questions such as, does the moon only exist when we are looking at it? Confronted with empirical evidence, that double slit experiment was done countless times and had exactly the same response. That photon was influenced by the minds of the observers. And if that photon was influenced by the minds of the observers, what does it say about everything we look at and think about? What then is the real truth? And that is what we are seeking in our Buddhist practice. What is the real truth? As we study the seemingly objective world, we are discovering that nothing objectively exists, quote, from its own side, close quote, separate from our consciousness of whatever it is. As we study the seemingly objective world, we are discovering that nothing objectively exists from its own side, separate from our consciousness of whatever it is. It's a known phenomenon among the police and probably a few other people, that when there's an accident, say a car runs a red light and smashes into another car, and there are several people standing there observing the whole thing happen, there are going to be as many different versions of what actually happened as there were people standing there. Happens to their perceptions. There's a movie that expresses this, a Japanese movie, Rashomon, in which three or four men are sitting around a fire in the winter in Japan. They're actually basically taking apart this mon or gate to provide fuel for their fire. And to entertain themselves, one of them starts telling a story about something that happened out in the forest that involved a murder. And as he's continuing to tell the story, one of the other men pipes up and says, oh no, it didn't happen that way. This is how it happened. I watched it too. And then the third man said, oh no, it didn't happen the way either one of you is telling the tale. This is what really happened. And he tells it as well. So what really happened? What is really happening in each moment of our lives? There's enough general cultural agreement on what seems to be, that we assume it is fixed and real. But I think about the time when my father, who when he was 11 years old, started his own lending library, it turns out, He had a lot of books, and some really fascinating books. He had the old Edgar Rice Burroughs books on Tarzan and some other stuff, among other things. At any rate, by the time he was in high school, he was still collecting books. And I came upon his high school history book, which was not what we were studying in high school. I should say it was, technically we were studying the same events, the First World War, for example. But the telling of it was so different, you wouldn't have even thought it was the same war. Time changes a lot of things. And then, what is time anyway? In the Diamond Sutra, it says, past mind is unattainable, present mind is unattainable. Future mind is unattainable. And yesterday I told the story of the elderly woman who had a roadside stand selling what were known as mind refreshers. And the monk who had spent a career studying the Diamond Sutra and commenting on it, and was traveling to the south to do a battle with, I think it was Wei Ning, actually. And she said, I'll give you one of these mind refreshers for free if you can tell me this. In the Diamond Sutra, since you're so knowledgeable about it, it says, present mind is unattainable, past mind is unattainable, and future mind is unattainable. So which mind are you going to refresh with one of these mind refreshers? And of course it stymied the monk, and he ended up asking for the teaching in the end. Back to Hui Ning, what he heard that itinerant pilgrim chanting out of the Diamond Sutra was, arouse the mind that abides nowhere. Arouse the mind that abides nowhere. That puts a lot of things into question. Objective reality is an unexamined implicit assumption, merely an idea in our mind. It is similar to thinking that a cloud exists on its own. Apart from the air, the idea of a cloud is an abstraction. The Diamond Sutra. It's actually, the original copy of the Diamond Sutra is the only extant copy of the first ever book, printed book, interestingly enough. A couple of years ago, there was an exhibit at the Getty Museum in Southern California of the Dunhuang Caves. It was actually quite a fabulous exhibit. They had reproduced three of the caves using the original mud that produced the colors of all these elaborate paintings on the walls of the caves. Dunhuang, or Mogao, was at one point a military site, and there ended up a lot of monks there, and they created these caves in the limestone cliffs at the edge of the Gobi Desert. And there were exquisite paintings there. can't remember how many caves, 17 caves that have been excavated. And eventually it was lost. The sands of the desert took over and buried the caves, buried evidence of them. The reason I know so much about it is because the father of a young friend of mine happens to be the lead engineer tasked with developing some means to keep the desert from coming back and overcoming them again, and is frequently in China. He's the one that actually established this exhibit in the Getty. And they had that original manuscript, that original printed book. It was actually a scroll, but in those days, books were scrolls. There's a tremendous amount of mind-bending truth in the Diamond Sutra. And quantum physics, quantum mechanics is now supporting what is said in those. So this should give us a wonderful foundation for exploring our own mind. We're not as fixed as we thought we were. In fact, we're not fixed at all. Life is not fixed. Dharma's here, that means dharma's meaning phenomena. Dharma's here are empty, or the primal void. None are born or die, nor are they stained or pure, nor do they wax or wane. So an emptiness, no form, no feeling, thought or choice, nor is there consciousness. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. No color, sound, smell, taste, touch, or what the mind takes hold of. Nor even act of sensing. What? As we look out the window, aren't those trees out there? We sit here, seemingly solid, and certainly if we walk in front of a speeding car, we're going to find out how solid we are. But are we really that solid? And that brings us back down to that first teisho here of this sesshin. What is it that dies? What is life and death? Who are we? What are we? As we dive deeply into the exploration of our inner sense, wordlessly raising an eyebrow, questioning everything, what will we find? Countless human beings from countless cultures, actually, have done that and found incredible freedom, true liberation as a result. All we can say is they discovered their true nature to some degree. The deeper the discovery, the more free we are. To be free of the habit patterns of greed, anger, and delusion. To be free so that it doesn't matter what happens in our life. We're not wrapped around a tree about it. Of course, there is still feeling, there is still pain, there is still joy, there is still excitement, there is still living and dying on a relative level. But the realization we can reach is so inherently freeing. That, like Jacques Lacan in Buchenwald, no matter what our circumstances are, we can live in joy. Our innate compassion comes forth. Our innate wisdom comes forth, unhindered by ideas of what we have to do, what we can't do, what we should do, what we ought to do, what we want to do. And it's miraculous. And this is built into every single one of us. We have now 4 more days in which to continue exploring more and more deeply, to inch by inch, breath by breath, become a little bit more free. That Sokan practice, the extended out-breath practice, is a miracle worker here. To extend that out-breath, totally present with the experience, and with that eyebrow cocked, open to what it might reveal, not anticipating what it might reveal, but simply open to possibility and reaching continually deeper and deeper and deeper. And then, as the great Zen master Hakuin said, you cannot fail to come to awakening any more than you can fail to hit the ground when you stamp your foot. So again, I urge you to get a copy of the Diamond Sutra. It's a very short little sutra, but profound and deep. And study it and ponder it. Be curious about it. But be careful that you don't try to pin it into specifics of reality. We're well trained in that aspect of our living. But there's another dimension. And it's worth opening to. So thank you for listening. We'll stop now and recite the 4 vows.